Governor Ned Lamont has been on a mission to get more Black and Latino residents vaccinated. The reason being, their vaccination rates are half of white residents.
It is time for us to fight the fear of taking this vaccine, to fight the fear of COVID. And for us, it begins right here with these COVID shots today.
Reverend Carl McCluster was one of nine Black and Latino clergy in Bridgeport who attended a Lamont event in hopes of allaying fears of the vaccine in their communities. The state has set up mobile clinics to get the vaccine in predominantly minority communities. State figures show that 16% of white residents have taken their first shot of the vaccine. Only 7% of Black and Latino residents. This is C19, WSHU's daily news update from the Connecticut and New York region. Coming up, New York Democrats have a new study on taxes, and they're waving it in the governor's face. Also, debating where to put all the trash on Long Island and why four of America's greatest authors moved to the same small town. I'm Charles Lane. Democratic lawmakers support new higher taxes on New York's richest residents, even though Governor Andrew Cuomo continues to resist raising their taxes. Karen DeWitt reports on a recent study that shows the state's 120 billionaires increased their wealth by $88 billion during the pandemic.
The study by the left-leaning groups Americans for Tax Fairness and Healthcare for America Now calculates that the state's billionaires, who include Michael Bloomberg, the Lauder family, David Koch, and Rupert Murdoch, saw their earnings and investments rise by 16.8% during the first 10 months of the pandemic. Yvette Alfonso heads Citizen Action New York, a reform advocacy group. She says while New York's financial industry took a hit during the last economic downturn, this time Wall Street and wealthy investors flourished.
Nobody says they shouldn't have money, but they really don't work for it. They make their money out of investments and doubling and paying out shareholders and all that. We're the ones who work for this money.
Citizen Action and others who support taxing the wealthy would like to see several changes, including a higher capital gains tax, reinstating the stock transfer tax, and imposing higher inheritance taxes on large estates. Governor Cuomo's budget plan proposes adding a new tax bracket for those making more than $5 million a year. Despite including the proposals in his budget, Cuomo continues to make the argument against them.
When an individual state raises taxes, it now puts that state at a competitive disadvantage with other states.
Cuomo's hoping that a federal relief package will make the tax increases unnecessary. He's seeking $15 billion to close a shortfall in the current state budget and a projected gap in the new fiscal year. The most recent package, supported by Democrats in the House of Representatives, would give New York $12.7 billion to handle its budget shortfall. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Long Island has a trash problem. Environmental and community advocates agree on that, but they don't agree on what to do about it, as WSHU's J.D. Allen reports.
Adrian Esposito at the Citizens Campaign for the Environment endorsed this week a plan to truck in over 1,900 tons of trash to a waste transfer station proposed in Medford. It's one of three proposals to haul away trash by railway. The Brookhaven Landfill Action and Remediation Group claims her organization turned its back on environmental justice. They say the proposals disproportionately impact low-income and communities of color. The group calls for the town of Brookhaven to find a more equitable solution. Esposito says Long Island is almost out of time, with the area landfill expected to close in 2024.
This is the reality. You live on an island. The choices are limited. It's not a magic wand. To be a sustainable island, we need to manage our solid waste. And honestly, we generate a lot.
She supports the Medford Transfer Station because it is proposed in an existing industrial area, not a residential community like the other two proposals. J.D. Allen, WSHU News.
Coming up, we'll visit where all the cool authors hang out. But first, headlines and a message from C19's supporter.
Support for C19 comes from Hartford Healthcare, More COVID vaccine answers at hartfordhealthcare.org/vaccine or 833-621-0600.
On Long Island, the 7-day COVID-19 positivity rate ticked up to 4.1%. The rest of New York remains at 3.3%. However, hospitalizations in the state have fallen to their lowest level since early December. The 7-day rate in Connecticut decreased to 2.5%. The Long Island Power Authority puts the price tag of building up green energy projects at $1.5 billion. This includes projects like the South Fork Wind Farm and grid upgrades to accommodate more solar panels. LIPA officials are hoping that state regulators will push this cost to all New Yorkers who will be getting some of this electricity, not just Long Islanders, where the projects are located. More than 100 people testified in support of a bill that would give terminally ill adults in Connecticut the option of medical aid in dying. Supporters say it would give patients the option to die on their own terms. State Representative Jonathan Steinberg chairs the committee overseeing the bill. He says he wants to advance it to the full vote of the legislature this year. Connecticut has been debating this issue for a decade. New York has a similar bill pending in the Assembly. Aid in dying is legal in 9 states and Washington, D.C. Four of America's greatest authors lived in the same small town in the mid-1800s. They moved in the same social circles, sometimes even collaborated. And they're buried just a few steps away from each other on a hill called Author's Ridge in Concord, Massachusetts. Davis Donovan brings us this story as part of his podcast, Off the Path.
Author's Ridge is part of a cemetery in Concord called Sleepy Hollow. No relation to Washington Irving's classic story, this other Sleepy Hollow is the final resting place of Ralph Waldo Emerson, Henry David Thoreau, Nathaniel Hawthorne, and Louisa May Alcott.
And visitors to Concord often ask me, how did so many literary heavyweights end up in this little town in the middle of nowhere?
This is local historian Victor Curran.
And the short answer to that question is Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Emerson, a poet and philosopher, had family ties to Concord. His grandparents lived here. They witnessed Concord's other claim to fame, the battle that launched the American Revolution. Emerson later memorialized it in a poem that gave the battle its famous nickname.
By the rude bridge that arched the flood, their flag to April's breeze unfurled. Here once the embattled farmers stood and fired the shot heard round the world.
Emerson was already a well-known public thinker when he moved to Concord in 1834, according to Robert Gross. He's the author of an upcoming book on Concord's literary history. Emerson liked small-town life, and he liked being out of the city, close to nature.
Emerson is forging his ideas as he's settling into Concord. We haven't really recognized how much of what he's writing about is coming straight out of his conversations with his neighbors, his observations of his new hometown.
His first essay in his new home is called Nature, and it's still one of his most famous.
When he's sitting writing this, he's both thinking broadly about ideas he's absorbed from his reading, but also reflecting his own walks to Walden Pond.
That's right, the famous Walden Pond in Concord, immortalized by Henry David Thoreau. More on that later. Emerson owned a plot of land on the edge of the pond, and Gross says he started to notice how many people, like him, were escaping the city for solitude.
People are separating out from their neighbors in almost every sphere of life. They're pulling apart. So that's a move toward greater individual assertion and pursuit of individual interests rather than group interests.
Emerson laid out the principles of a new philosophy called transcendentalism in his essay Nature. It's about the powers of the simple life, individuality, freedom, and the inherent goodness of humanity.
The lover of nature is he whose inward and outward senses are still truly adjusted to each other, who has retained the spirit of infancy even into the era of manhood. His intercourse with heaven and earth becomes part of his daily food. In the presence of nature, a wild delight runs through the man. in spite of real sorrows.
Emerson's eager to build a community in which there are like-minded intellectuals around him, a new kind of American literature, a fresh start. And where? A fresh start in nature. And Concord, he sees in its woods and its environment, a perfect place to create a literary community.
And you can see the community Emerson built by walking through the town cemetery.
We're on top of the highest hill here in Sleepy Hollow.
Victor Curran, the local historian, leads me up to Emerson's grave, and it's impossible to miss.
Most of the stones in this cemetery are typical Victorian style, granite or marble stone. And here is this, it's about 5 feet high, big chunk of raw rose quartz. It towers above everything else here, as Emerson himself was kind of a towering figure in 19th century Concord.
But there were other famous names here. Walk a few steps down the winding path and you find the grave of Emerson's close friend, Henry David Thoreau. He was a local who worked in his family's pencil factory when he met Emerson.
Waldo said to him, Henry says, do you keep a journal? And Henry took the hint and he began to keep a journal, which he kept faithfully for the rest of his life.
The journal added up to thousands of pages. Part of it was written from 1845 to 1847, when Thoreau lived in a cabin on Walden Pond, on the land Emerson owned. It became the basis for Walden, one of the most beloved books in American literature.
So now you have the core, the nucleus of this literary community in Concord.
And right next to Thoreau's simple granite headstone is Nathaniel Hawthorne, author of The Scarlet Letter. Hawthorne joined his friends in Concord when he came with his wife in the 1840s.
And moved to Concord on their wedding day, and they were looking for a place to live. And Waldo Emerson said to them, he says, my grandparents' house is empty.
Another member of the group was a teacher named Bronson Alcott. He had some eccentric ideas about education for the time. He got rid of discipline and busy work and taught kids transcendentalist ideals, like free inquiry. His experiments in alternative schooling, as well as an attempt to start a utopian commune, left his family broke. Bronson's mostly forgotten today, but his daughter is not. She's Louisa May Alcott.
And she used to babysit for Waldo Emerson's children. And she would make up stories to entertain them. She was writing all kinds of books and articles, whatever she could get published and bring some money into the house. Her publisher said to her, you know what the market needs is a really good book for young girls. She sat down and put herself to work, and so she wrote a first draft of the book that we now know as Little Women, and the Alcott family never needed to worry about money again.
Alcott's grave is in a family plot with her father Bronson and her sisters, the inspiration for Little Women. There's a long tradition on Author's Ridge in the Sleepy Hollow Cemetery. Literary fans leave offerings on the gravesites of Emerson, Thoreau, Hawthorne, and Alcott. Pens, pencils, and notebooks. This is Off the Path from WSHU Public Radio. I'm Davis Donovan, offering old and new stories on the road from New York to Boston.
For the latest news from Long Island and Connecticut, you can listen on the radio or online at WSHU.org. C19 is supported by Hartford HealthCare. Here at WSHU, we think local news is important, and we're glad that you think it's important, too. Thank you for your support, and thank you for sharing our podcast with your friends. I'm Charles Lane. We'll be back on Monday.